The following is brought to you in association with and from a proud partner of the Shining Wizards Network. Entertainment here.
You're listening to Wrestling Night in Canada on the Shining Wizards Network with your hosts, Matt Copper, Dustin Maruca, and Snowy White.
What's up, everyone? Welcome into another exciting episode of Wrestling Night in Canada. I'm Snowy White.
I'm Matt Copper.
And oh, wait a minute. Oh, I don't hear something.
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh. What could have happened?
look, I know it's been a while, but look, I'll just level with you. Dustin's not here. He's still a part of the show.
Yeah.
He's still a part of the show. He hasn't quit. So, yeah. Like, this isn't narrowed down to a tag team just yet.
Yeah, yeah. So. I was going to say, well, for one night, you know, we've gone from the usual triple threat down to a tag team.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the Freebirds, it wasn't all six-man. Sometimes they had tag team matches.
It's a tag team match, player.
Yeah, yeah. So since we're, I was thinking about this, you know, and I'm thinking, okay, if it's just going to be the two of us,
uh-huh.
Okay, and if we're just going to be a tag team. Snowy and Matt.
Yeah.
I was thinking, well, okay, what about like the S&M Express? No, wait a minute. No, I don't think that'll work.
No, that's got implications.
Yeah. yeah.
I mean, yeah. I'm not kink shaming.
That's right. You do you.
Yeah.
You do you. That's just not for us. But yeah, for our longtime listeners, thank you for your patience. We're back. It's been about a month, I guess.
At least, yeah.
Yeah. But just once again, you're producing kick-ass records.
Yeah.
Ducky went on tour.
Yeah, and we're just, like, right now, he's just got an unfortunate allergy flare-up, yeah. And he can't really be here today. So
right. Yeah. So it's like, well, are we going to be able to do this just the two of us? And it's like,
yeah.
Well, on Radioactive Metal, I have one co-host.
Yep.
You know, so
it'll be different, but we'll still get it done.
That's right. You know, and we could talk about him too.
Yeah.
What a great guy he is.
Of course.
God, it pisses me off.
Great drummer.
Yeah. Jesus. Yeah. You know, I can't think of a better person to be around. That fucking guy.
Yeah. With his full beard and his hats.
That's right. God.
I don't think I've seen him wear the same band shirt twice.
That's right. So, but we'll persevere. We'll make this work. And I'm ready to rock and roll. I guess probably the first thing we should probably discuss, and as we normally do, this is kind of your area, the other day as we speak.
Yeah.
Was Forbidden Door.
Yeah, and well, even since the last episode, we had Double or Nothing, but I'm sure everybody knows what happened at that then, so.
Yeah, an awful lot has gone on in the past month or so. So we're going to make up all of our beautiful listeners. We're going to make it up to them for our absence right now with just a kick-ass episode. So what do we got going on?
Well, Forbidden Door, the second annual Forbidden Door, took place in kind of our backyard in Toronto, Ontario this year. So it's American company versus a Japanese company in a Canadian arena. So, hey, right. You know what? I'm all for it.
I'm all for it.
Canadian wrestling
for sure.
Crowds are always the best. So
For sure. And they did 12,000 or something for Forbidden Door.
Yeah, and the highest gate that AEW has ever produced for a live event at over $1 million. So, that was good for them. And it was like, unlike last year's, it wasn't plagued by injuries. So it wasn't cursed show like it was last year. And not saying last year's show was bad. It's just, this year the injuries were and last minute changes were at a very bare minimum, like pretty much right until the very end of the show, if I do say so myself. And with that, we'll just go through the card. I'm not gonna go through the pre-show matches because you can still watch those for free on YouTube if you want.
So man, we don't go all night. Holy jeez!
Yeah, the pay-per-view was long enough as it was. So, yeah. So starting off, we had the AEW Championship match between MJF defending against Hiroshi Tanahashi. So
wow,
yeah, this was this was announced to be the first match the previous night on AEW's new show, Saturday Collision, where MJF said that it was going on first because he doesn't want to be in Canada any longer than he has to be.
So, which
prime heel heat right
yeah,
there.
Yeah, yeah. Even if that's true, even if that's a shoot, it yeah. works. It
yeah.
works as a work. Like, it just, yeah, that's fantastic. That's what makes MJF so good right now.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. But yeah, like, the match was really good and, like, typical MJF shenanigans that you'd expect out of him at this point. Hiroshi Tanahashi, being the ace of New Japan that he is, like, put him through the paces, but MJF being MJF found a way to sneak away a win and use the Dynamite Diamond Ring to knock out Tanahashi for the cheap pin. And even during the match, MJF had sent out a tweet. He had scheduled it to post in the middle of the match saying, it's like, something along the lines of, like, I've already, he's like, if you're reading this, then I've already beaten the ace. Or it was just like prime heel stuff that, yeah, just making everything work for himself in this day and age. So MJF's reign of terror, as he likes to put it, continues. So moving on from that, we had the first match in the men's Owen Hart Cup tournament with CM Punk taking on Satoshi Kojima. Let me tell you something. CM Punk returned on the very first episode of Collision in Chicago. Not surprisingly, he was cheered and welcomed like a god.
Mm-hmm.
Not the case in Toronto on either Collision or this night. The Canadian crowd let him know exactly what they thought of him ever since the goings-on of Brawl Out from last year.
Right.
Yeah. I have a feeling going forward, anywhere but Chicago, this is probably the reaction that he's going to get a majority of. And he was playing into it. Even though he is still technically a babyface, he was playing into the heat that he was getting. So I can honestly, like, logically, just given the heat that he gets, you would say, turn him heel.
Like, yeah, or this is one of those cases where the fans turned Steve Austin face. The fans turned The Rock face. Years ago, the fans turned Hulk Hogan face, pre-Hulkamania, So I have a feeling it's going to be the fans that turn Punk. And if they do the smart thing, they'll run with it.
Yeah, well, Tony Khan usually does listen to the fans. So he's not like Vince, where it's just like, ah, they don't know what they want. I know what they want. I'll tell them.
But on the other hand, okay, like they're not going to have much of a choice. But Punk is the AEW cash cow.
Yep.
Like he's their biggest draw.
Yep.
And he's only going to be a huge draw as a babyface because he's got merch to sell.
I mean, face or heel, no matter what, in Chicago, he's always going to sell tickets and always going to move merch.
Yeah, so. But that's one city. And granted, Chicago is, the third largest city in the U.S.?
Yep.
But that's still only one city.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be interesting how it plays out.
Thankfully, AEW goes there a lot.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. They should definitely kind of, and I'll be talking about this a little later, but Bret Hart and Calgary.
Yeah.
Okay. Versus the rest of the world.
Yeah.
Playing that up.
So basically,
where he's a face in Chicago. Hated everywhere else.
Yeah, just the Hart Foundation.
And when he comes to Chicago, like, just play that up.
Mm-hmm.
It should be gold.
Yeah, no, I agree. That's like may as well play to the strengths of the audience. Like, it's just makes the most sense. Like, because one thing I hate about WWE is when they pretend that they ignore the fan reactions.
Yeah.
And then, when they put together their video packages, they re-edit it in such a way. It's just like when Becky Lynch was first becoming the man and everybody was cheering her, but she was supposed to be a heel.
Right.
And in the video packages, like, people were booing her. And it's like, nope, that's not how that happened. That is not how that happened.
Yeah. And this has been the formula for 100 years. Listen to the fan. Like, the whole idea. Matches get dictated with fan results.
Well, that's
by fan reaction.
Yeah, well, that's exactly what happened with Hogan versus The Rock at WrestleMania 18. Mm-hmm. Initially, Hogan went into that as Hollywood Hulk Hogan as the heel, but they were listening to the crowd and they're like, all right, let's just do it this way.
Yeah, we have to switch gears.
Yeah. And when you're Hulk Hogan and The Rock, chances are you're not going to get punished a whole lot. Like, can they do? can they do to you?
Yeah. And what a moment that was when they were face to face. And I'm not even a big WWF fan, but that moment sticks in my brain.
Like, yeah.
When they were face to face and the audience was, and once again, Toronto.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Canadian crowds, man.
That's right.
But it wasn't at the Scotia, like that. Yeah, that was at the Sky Dome, too, so it was ultra loud.
That's right.
For WrestleMania. Oh, and it just reminded me another piece of revisionist history that WWE has done with, hey, it is, let's be honest here. When they unveiled the Universal Championship back in 2016 for the first time, I watched that live. That crowd booed that belt so hard. Now you look at the video that's on WWE's actual YouTube page, like their official YouTube page, they've replaced the boos with cheers. Oh, and they just happened to turn the comments off on the video.
Oh,
so you can't even comment on it. So,
wow. You
know. Yeah, nothing suspicious there whatsoever.
not at all.
But anyway, getting back to CM Punk versus Kojima. Yeah, Punk was just playing into the crowd's heat on him so hard. And I kind of expected CM Punk to win this one, and he did. So he moves on to the next round in the tournament.
Yeah.
But after the match was over, he helped Kojima up and raised his hand too, so even though he was playing heel, he kind of still went back and did the babyface thing afterwards. So, being a little professional, I suppose. next match, we had a fatal four-way match for the AEW International Championship. Orange Cassidy defending against Zack Sabre Jr., Katsuyori Shibata, and Daniel Garcia. Daniel Garcia, the only person in this match not currently holding a championship, by the way.
Right,
so,
okay.
With Zack Sabre Jr. being the NJPW World Television Champion. And Shibata being the ROH Pure Champion.
Yeah.
So,
right.
But the only one on the line was Orange Cassidy's. how is that fair? But no, this was just Orange Cassidy like continuing on his like weekly defenses of the International Championship. He has defended that championship more in the time as he has had it, which is like less than a year. That he's had that championship. He's defended it more times than Roman Reigns has defended the Universal Championship in one over 1,000 days.
Wow.
So, yeah.
That tells you something.
Yeah.
You know.
Like there's a joke going around that like every episode of Dynamite starts with an Orange Cassidy match defending the International Championship, and it's almost like Jefferson Starship has become like the second theme for Dynamite.
The theme, yeah.
Yeah. But which, hey, I have no problem with. I like that song.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, and I like Orange Cassidy.
He impresses me more and more. Like, I know a lot of people don't like the gimmick, like some people, like Mr. Cornette. But no, I like Orange Cassidy. Like, his gimmick is refreshing, and he can actually go in the ring when he needs to.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, it's not just like his laziness gimmick is just sort of peppered in there. Like, it's not everything about him.
Mm-hmm.
So that's refreshing. If it was WWE, then yeah, I shudder to think what they would do with a gimmick like that.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. All right. Next up, we had the singles match for the IWGP World Heavyweight Championship. It was Sonata defending against Jungle Boy Jack Perry. Yeah. Well, I know you expected Jungle Jack to take away the upset victory, but
I kind of did because I was thinking, okay, when I first made the prediction though. For some reason, I was thinking it was the U.S. title they were fighting for. And then when the graphic showed up that it was for the heavyweight title, then it kind of hit me. It's like, oh, I'm losing this. Because, like, I was thinking it's for the IWGP U.S. and they're giving him a big push as a singles, which they should. And maybe he's got some dates in Japan coming up.
Yeah.
So I'm totally thinking outside the box and thinking, well, these guys aren't Pick and Perry.
No.
So this is where I might score some points. Well,
no.
Right in front of my face.
Nope. Kenny Omega was the U.S. champion.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But, it's just, yeah, I know. It, like, it would have been cool to see Jungle Jack pick up the win, but, like, even when he was announced as the challenger, a lot of people were just like, what? Jungle Boy? Out of all the people AEW has, you picked Jungle Boy to compete for the IWGP World Heavyweight Championship? It's like, I wasn't opposed to it. I'm just like, I like Jungle Joe. I like Jungle Boy. Like, he's great. He's a great wrestler, and I would love to see him, like, do a tour of Japan as their world champion. But
Right. Obviously
wasn't in the cards. Sonata picked up the win, retained the title. But what happened after the match?
This is the thing that kind of gnaws at me, actually.
Yeah.
Because Hook,
Hook had accompanied Jungle Boy to ringside, was helping him back up the ramp after his defeat, and then Jungle Boy turned heel, turned on Hook.
Right.
And yeah, like, I haven't watched Dynamite yet as of yesterday because I was a little busy. I was preoccupied with other things. Sorry. Sorry, wrestling's not. some things are more important than wrestling.
Some things are more important.
Okay?
Yes, I get
but,
it.
Yeah. But yeah, I did watch the YouTube video of his promo. He came out with sunglasses, as you do when you're a heel in wrestling.
Of course, yeah. As soon as you turn heel, you gotta put shades.
You gotta wear sunglasses indoors.
Of course.
But yeah, came out, kind of did the whole typical, like, I blame the fans promo when someone turns heel. Because he's been a squeaky clean babyface for 4 years now. So, but he's officially Jungle Boy no more. He is just Jack Perry. Yeah.
Okay, see, like I said, this is the thing that's kind of gnawing at me because they're giving him the solo push.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got, you know, with the Baltimore song and everyone doing the wave and all that. Okay, they're on to something.
Yep.
Give it a good year until, like, the guy's mega hot, then turn him.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's really going to mean something. Turning him heel now means nothing.
No, it's it did seem like... I understand based on, like, people's reactions towards him lately that they kind of seem to be the fans did seem to have turned on him or soured on him a little bit. But, yeah, I don't know. Maybe they should have made him TNT champion before this or something.
Yeah, giving him
a baby. Like, I know he was tag team champion with Luchasaurus, but, yeah, I don't know, like, what is he? Like, he seems to be going for the FTW title, but that's not even recognized as
that's
an official championship.
Even, I don't even know what the hell.
So, I don't know. Maybe he'll be the guy to defeat Orange Cassidy, and then he'll get huge heel heat for that. That's the best I can picture.
That's,
out of this.
Yeah. That would definitely work. And then you have Orange chasing him.
Yep.
So.
Or maybe Orange takes some time off. Or Orange has been working really hard, so he deserves a little time off if he does drop the title to Jack Perry. No more Jungle Boy. So yeah, before he even said his promo, he said, like, to cut off the music because he's sick of people singing it. So I hope he doesn't get just some generic rock track for his new music. Like, I know you were saying the other day on Facebook that it would be cool to see him have Welcome to the Jungle by Guns N' Roses.
If they're dropping Jungle Boy, then there's no...
Yeah.
You know.
I don't know. Well, I guess we'll see.
If he's turning him heel and they're going to call him, like, Jungle Jack Perry or something, which they really should.
Yeah.
And give him this, if Tony Khan, we know how much he loves spending money on licensing and all that.
Oh, yeah, we'll get to that later.
you might as well buy Welcome to the Jungle.
Yeah, I don't
know. It's perfect.
I don't know how expensive that would be. Like, to use week after week after week, but
well,
I mean, he's already paid for Jefferson Starship, and he paid for Tarzan Boy for the longest time, and I don't know, like, how many other themes is he recently? He just got Saturday Night's All Right for Fighting as the theme song for Collision. And
is it the original Elton John?
Yes,
really?
It's not the Nickelback version.
I would have taken the Nickelback over the original. Yeah,
okay. Well,
for something like that, like, yeah, give it a more modern sound. And, you know, some people are going to throw their...
Well, I know a lot of people,
you know...
a lot of people had hoped when Dynamite first became a thing that TNT was going to... by AC/DC was going to be the theme song for that show. But no, they ended up getting an original for that. But... And I don't know if he pays... Well, he doesn't pay for Ruby Soho. Obviously, like, I think Lars gave them that song.
Yeah, I'll never understand that.
It's like, he could have made so much money off of that.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
you know, and I understand, okay, he's a punk rocker. He's not all about the money, but
it's your job.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
You know, like, but that's a whole other thing. Yeah.
But, yeah, and I don't know if he pays for Judas by Fozzy or if Chris Jericho's, that's his band. So I don't know if they have to pay the record label for that. I imagine they probably do. So unless Chris Jericho had it in his contract as a workaround that he just uses that. But yeah, I guess next week we'll see if formerly Jungle Boy will have a new theme song and a new look potentially. Like, I don't think his current hairstyle really goes well if he's not being a Jungle Boy. So
if he cuts his hair, that's just going to drive my wife crazy. She loves his hair.
Yeah. I don't know if they're just going to make him look like his dad. I don't know. Like, it's...
No. Okay. I understand who his dad was and is, and he's a big star, especially when he was younger. As great as he was on Riverdale as... Fred Andrews.
Right.
His heyday was 90210.
Yep.
And use that. But use it. He already looks like his dad to begin with.
Oh, of course.
Like wow.
Yeah.
But the big hair and all that, you can see it, but he does have his own identity.
Yeah.
If you just try to make him look like his dad,
that's such a WWE thing.
Yeah,
to do.
That's just gonna suck.
Yeah, well, I guess we'll see. Time will tell. I have high hopes for his heel run. Like I said, I'd like to see him be the guy who beats Orange Cassidy for the International Championship.
And sometimes it's just fun cheering for the heels.
Yeah, I am cautiously optimistic. We'll just say that.
So
moving along. 10-man tag match, the Elite with Eddie Kingston and Tomohiro Ishii versus the Blackpool Combat Club with Konosuke Takeshita and Shota Umino. This was one of the matches of the night, I thought. It was just spot fest after spot fest after spot fest. The match went over 20 minutes long. It was just an absolute war. And yeah, I just love matches. AEW does matches like this so well, I find.
Oh, yeah.
Multi-man matches. Or even multi-man tag matches. And, like, just throwing in a couple of guys from New Japan in there, too. One little touch that I saw that they covered on being the Elite on Monday was that, like, all the guys from the Elite had that line shaved into their eyebrow like Eddie Kingston does. Just to as kind of a show of, like, tag team unity.
Right.
Even though Eddie Kingston made pretty clear that, I don't like you guys, I don't respect you guys, but I'll work with you guys because I hate Claudio more. So...
The enemy of my enemy.
Yeah. And like as soon as the Blackpool Combat Club were coming out through the audience, as soon as like Claudio was in a sight of Eddie Kingston, he was just on the turnbuckle and you couldn't hear him, but you know what he was saying.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
the body language says more than real words ever could. But yeah, this one was fun. I enjoyed it. The Elite Kingston and Ishii picked up the win as I thought they would, because like being that Danielson was in the main event, I figured like one has to win and the other has to lose. Like Blackpool Combat Club can't really take both, I don't think, especially since BCC beat the Elite at Double or Nothing in the Anarchy in the Arena. I thought it only made sense that the Elite would get their win back on this one. So, but yeah, it was good. I liked it. And, following that was the AEW Women's World Championship match, Toni Storm defending against Willow Nightingale. Now, this initially was supposed to be a very different match, but, you know, injuries being what they are, this was supposed to be Jamie Hayter defending against Mercedes Moné or Sasha Banks.
Okay, yeah.
But unfortunately, both women are injured currently. So,
oh, okay.
So at Double or Nothing, Jamie Hayter dropped her championship to Toni Storm, and in the finals for the NJPW Strong Women's Championship, Mercedes Moné broke her ankle during the match. They called an audible and Willow Nightingale picked up the championship instead.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, very different than what it could have been. But that being said, I'm happy that Willow Nightingale got a featured match on this
card. Yeah, on this pay-per-view.
Yeah, it's like good. Like she's really good.
She deserves
like,
it. Yeah.
People sleep. I think people tend to sleep on her too much. Like she's really good at what she does. And yeah, Toni Storm, of course, being like everybody knows how good Toni Storm is by this point. So, like the only unfortunate thing about this match was that it had to follow that 10-man tag, and like the crowd was kind of a little bit deflated, so they weren't like really reacting to much.
Mm-hmm.
Always like yeah, unfortunate. But that's just kind of the way these cards have to be planned out. Sometimes you can't do like all the bangers all in a row, or else like the crowd by the main event is just going to be completely gassed.
It's like the old Saturday Night Main Event when I was a teenager, where you'd have Hulk Hogan would be the first match, and then there would be like two or three matches that nobody cared about. You can't Hogan would defend the title against Paul Orndorff or whatever, crowd goes nuts, and then it's like Nikolai Volkoff versus like fucking Coco Beware, and it's like, is anybody still watching this now?
Nope. if they are, they're just doing it to be nice.
They just forgot to walk away.
Yeah. That or like, I don't know, I guess. Yeah, why would you do that? Like, maybe it would make sense like to have it like that way live, just so the crowd is hot for Hulk Hogan, and then like edit it in such a way for television.
Right.
To put it on last,
mm-hmm.
but to have it on first on TV, people are just going to change the channel.
But I guess the important thing is everyone watched Hogan.
I guess, yeah. Like, yeah, the ratings reflect what time they watch, so.
Mm.
Yeah. Oh, well, I don't know. I'm not in the TV business, but
Saturday Night Main Event is a whole other turnbuckle talk we could.
Yeah.
Get into sometime.
Absolutely.
Oh, my God.
Okay. Now, this next match, oh, my God. Match of the year contender, Will Ospreay versus Kenny Omega for the IWGP United States Championship. Holy shit. This match, like, if you saw their match from Wrestle Kingdom in January, where Kenny Omega beat Ospreay for the title, that match in and of itself was also a banger. And it's like these guys kind of became their own. They had to like top themselves, which is like the hardest thing you can do.
Mm-hmm.
Like topping another match, that's something else. But topping a match that these two have previously already held. But you know what? This was an all-out war between these two. It got bloody. It got brutal. There was Kenny Omega took some slams into like slamming his head into the announce table that looked very unprotected. I was kind of concerned for him. There was a screwdriver in there at one point. Don Callis got ejected from ringside, but then just kind of came back.
Yeah, anyway. That I didn't understand.
Yeah,
like, what's the point?
Yeah, whatever. But
unless he was to come back and the ref would say, no, no.
Yeah.
And then show him the ref pushing him up the aisle.
Out.
Yeah, you know, or calling security. Well, security has to bring in one of the wrestlers to there's ways of doing it.
And yeah.
That was not the right way to do it.
Well, I'm thankful that the screwdriver spot wasn't the finish of the match, because that would have been very would have been very sports entertainment-y.
Yeah.
But Omega got his foot on the rope at the very last second. And then, there was the one moment where it looked like Kenny Omega really hurt himself or got hurt, because Ospreay hit him with the Tiger Driver 91, and like it was pretty obvious that Kenny Omega landed right on top of his head. I'm surprised he's okay. Mm-hmm. I'm glad he's okay.
Yeah, for sure.
At the same time, very surprised. I'm surprised that wasn't the finish of the match. But my favorite part of the match, I thought, was when Ospreay hit Kenny Omega with the one-winged angel. And nobody's ever kicked out of that move when Kenny Omega does it to people. But this time, Kenny Omega gets hit with his own move, kicks out at one, springs up, punches the mat. You could just tell him getting hit with his own move just set
That's
something
it.
Off in
yeah.
his head. And he's just like, nope, not having it. But Ospreay was able to hit him with another Stormbreaker, pick up the win. He's the new US IWGP US champion. Question is, now are we going to see Osprey Omega 3 at All In and Wembley.
Yeah.
Because that's, there has to be a third.
Oh, yeah.
There has to be a trilogy.
Yeah, this is.
Like, and being that Osprey is from England, I can only imagine that. And I, like, England loves Kenny Omega too. So I can only imagine the crowd at Wembley Stadium for that match would just be insane.
Rubber match.
Yeah. Like, I mean, the Canadian crowd was obviously nuts for Omega. The Japanese crowd was nuts because Kenny Omega and Will Ospreay are mainstays down there. So, like this is a winning combination here. like these two can do no wrong. Like, yeah, I don't know. I'm surprised this wasn't the main event, to be perfectly honest with you, because it, for all intents and purposes, should have been. Because,
right.
Like, not taking anything away from Okada and Danielson, but still, like, I don't know, in terms of, like, pure excitement and just, like, the feud going into it overall, had probably had the most build of any match on this card. So, I don't know why it didn't main event. But whatever, is what it is. That didn't take away from the fact that it was a 40-minute epic banger of a match.
Like, yeah, I don't think anyone was like, motherfucker, it's not on last. And, I'm leaving now.
Yeah. And after that, we had Sting, Darby Allin, and Tetsuya Naito taking on the Suzuki Gods, which was Chris Jericho, Sammy Guevara, and Minoru Suzuki. So this was obviously another breather match after the after the match that we just saw. And it was, you know, I was entertained by it. Like, it wasn't anything spectacular because it's like, sorry to say, but Sting and Chris Jericho are a little bit past their prime. Mm-hmm. Like, they were the big names in this match for sure. And then you had the two Japanese representatives in Minoru Suzuki and Tetsuya Naito. But Tetsuya Naito has a history with Chris Jericho in New Japan Wrestling involving the Intercontinental Championship from a few years back. So there was a little bit of storyline in there. But, and then you got, Darby and Sammy, two of the four pillars of AEW being there too. But, like, the match had some pretty good spots, but, like, there was one that Sammy hit on Sting that looked really bad, and it looked like he could have hurt him. Like, I don't think he's actually hurt because he was on Dynamite last night having a lightsaber sword fight with baseball bats with Chris Jericho. So he's fine, but it looked, anytime Sting takes a bump to the head or a bump on the neck, I always...
Yeah.
Same with Daniel Bryan. I always wince and get really worried. Oh,
especially Bryan, yeah, because he's got that...
concussion issues.
Yeah.
Like, I fully trust him that, yeah, like, I if these guys didn't think they could do it and the doctors didn't say they could do it, I don't imagine they... Well, that they wouldn't, obviously, but there's still that worry. Like, when Bryan Danielson first came back to WWE in 2018... after he retired, every time he would take a bump anywhere near his neck or head, I would just go like,
like, what are you doing?
Yeah. Like, I'm pretty sure one of the first moves he took when he came back was a power bomb onto the ring apron from Kevin Owens. I'm just like, oh, and just, is this over before it even begins?
And Sting is 64.
Yeah.
And he's doing this crazy stuff.
Yeah, and, like, Jericho's getting up there, too, and, like, Jericho's not doing nearly as crazy stuff as Sting is. Like, Jericho plays it safe for the most part.
Mm-hmm,
that's why he's never been injured.
Jericho is also only just over 50.
Yeah, 52, 53, 50, around there. Yeah.
But Sting has got 10 years, you know.
He was retired because of a neck injury from Seth Rollins.
Right, and, And now he's back and
taking table bumps. And
so that makes me think, okay, the WWF implemented their wellness policy.
Mm-hmm.
Good.
Yeah.
I'm starting to think now for their own good, when you have these older wrestlers that are, you know, past their prime and all that, should the wellness policies extend to, okay, you're of a certain maturity.
Yeah.
It's a nice way of saying you're fucking old, Sting. You're of a certain maturity, Sting. We don't want you doing this as per the wellness policy. Am I crazy? Do you think that would work? Should that be?
Well, you can try to tell guys like Sting and Chris Jericho that they're wrong. But I have a feeling that that would go over as well as telling Hulk Hogan that he's losing to anybody ever.
That he, yeah, yeah. That he doesn't choose.
That doesn't work for me,
doesn't
brother.
Work for me, brother. Yeah. Yeah, well, maybe that's why the Federation's going down the tubes.
You could also say that, I don't know, maybe these guys know their own bodies better than anyone else, but at the same time, ego is still a very real thing. Yeah. So
the E word, ego.
Like, yeah, like Sting's one of my all-time favorites, and I'm happy.
Oh, yeah.
I'm happy to see that he's still out there doing matches, but some of the spots he takes, it's just,
Sting doesn't need to do that. He never did. Even when he was younger, he never had to do, because get in there, like his matches with Flair, Clash of the Champions,
even in the UWF, he didn't have to jump off balconies and going through stacks of tables or take table spots, right. Doing no sells and stuff like that. Like,
and dude, you're in your mid 60s now. We would be just as happy if you just went in there and went,
woo!
Did your thing. And like, I'm good with that. Just go in there and be Sting. You don't have to, you don't have to compete with the younger guys.
Well, we'll see how much longer he does this for. I have a feeling his career is winding down, but at least, you know, at least he can end it on his terms and not have a doctor tell him, no, you're done.
Yeah. Because,
like, I imagine when you're a performer and
you don't want that.
You know, you don't want someone else telling you that you're done. Because that's what happened to Edge. And thankfully, he was able to come back. And I think he might even be winding down, too. So,
yeah, I couldn't imagine wrestling. Like, I was a wrestling fan before Sting. But wrestling without Sting.
Yeah.
In some capacity. That doesn't work for me, brother.
Well, it's like, you know, I felt the same way when, like, Stone Cold Steve Austin retired. But at the same time, it's like, I don't want to see him being carried out on a stretcher.
Right.
So it's like, my conscience, I would feel guilty for not wanting, or for, I would feel guilty if, like, I was just like, no, he has to keep wrestling forever and ever. And it's like, oh, wait, no, he's paralyzed. Shit. Well,
there we go. Yeah, okay.
The fans drove him to this.
Yeah.
But no, like, I hope Sting is winding down his career. He's got nothing left to prove. Like,
yeah.
I've been happy seeing him on TV every week, but I'm happy that he's not doing singles matches all the time. I'm happy that he's in these multi-man matches so he doesn't have as much workload.
Right.
But yeah, I would love to see him wind down. Question is, who's his last opponent going to be? That's like, it's not gonna be Flair.
It's not gonna be Flair. Like that's ideal. It's not Flair. It can't be Luger.
Nope.
Oh, jeez. Like, it's gonna be tough.
Can't be Bret Hart.
Like, no, they never really had much.
They had a rivalry in WCW a little bit because they had the Sharpshooter versus the Scorpion Deathlock.
Oh,
yeah,
yeah, but. Bret Hart in WCW was such a colossal failure.
Oh, one of the biggest in wrestling history.
Holy jeez. Yeah.
Without a doubt. Yeah. Bischoff should be ashamed of that.
Oh, jeez. Yes.
Yeah.
How do you have this roster and still the company go under?
That was the thing about WCW. It was the inmates running the asylum.
The asylum.
Everybody wanted to win.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it is what it is. Anyway, so yes. Sting, Darby, and Naito picked up the win. 15-minute match. Nothing bad about it, but it just following Omega Osprey is a bit of a task. But then again, this was by design to be like a breather match for people. And then we come to our main event.
Dun, 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 dun.
The American Dragon, Bryan Danielson, takes on the Rainmaker, Kazuchika Okada, for the first time ever.
Yes.
The build, the video packages for this match were very, very good. The posters for this match were very, very good. Mm-hmm. There was one that I shared to our group chat that looked like a movie poster. It was excellent. Now, I was looking forward to this match almost as much as I was Omega Osprey. It was very good. Very different than Omega Osprey, though. It wasn't it wasn't like spot fest after spot fest after spot fest. The unfortunate thing about this match, though, is that Daniel Bryan broke or got his arm broken from an elbow drop 10 minutes into the match. How he was able to continue and finish the match is beyond me. That guy, I don't think Bryan Danielson, DBD, you know who I'm talking about.
Right.
He must register pain differently than any other human being on the planet. It's like he gets hurt and he uses that to his advantage somehow.
Right.
I don't know. It's, but you can tell by the end of the match when he had Okada in the LaBelle lock and he wasn't using the second arm and he just like wrenched it back further and Okada tapped out. I did not expect that this match to end by submission.
Yeah, that's weird.
Yeah. But it did. And it was a good match. I'm not saying it was bad. It was they went on for half an hour, and two-thirds of that half an hour were done with a broken arm. So, I mean, props to Brian.
Mm-hmm.
I hope we get to see a follow-up to it after Brian's all healed up, though, because I would love to see these two face off together in Japan.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think he'll be good for Wembley, because initially it was thought that he fractured his arm and he'd be out for 6 to 8 weeks. Now it was revealed that it was a clean break, so that's okay. Probably going to be substantially longer.
Right.
Which means that Bryan Danielson, whatever you want to call him. So he's probably going to miss Blood and Guts too, which was slated to be the BCC versus the Elite, so that's unfortunate well. However, Bryan Danielson came out to the final countdown as his entrance.
Oh, yes, that's right.
For one night only, because during the media scrum, Tony Khan made it pretty clear that that would not be a regular thing. And just for that one night, to pay for the rights to that song for one night was just like pretty much the same price as a wrestler's contract.
Wow.
So, yeah, that's probably why ROH had so much debt behind them before they went out.
Wow.
Even in the 10 years between when Daniel Bryan joined WWE and ROH initially shut down before Khan bought it. Those 10 years, think about how many times they had to have used that song and how much it would have cost them. Like,
yeah, I really doubt they were paying for it back then.
You don't think so?
No, maybe maybe they would have had to have on TV. I don't know. But yeah,
an indie
company paying for...
Well, I mean, I know ECW never paid for Enter Sandman or Walk, so yeah.
And back in the day, for the Fantastics in the Crockett days, pre WCW, ZZ Top, Sharp Dressed Man, they never paid a dime for that.
No,
you know, and Cornette has been telling stories about how Dusty Hill from ZZ Top, you know, he was a big wrestling fan and all that. And when Cornette saw Hill backstage, he's like, oh no, he's here because he caught wind about how Sharp Dressed Man has been used, and he's
thinking he's going to be slapped with a cease and desist.
There's going to be blood, you know, and all that. But apparently Hill knew and didn't care. He's just a big wrestling fan.
Well, that's one thing for the artist to not care, but it's another thing for the record executives.
That's just it, too.
The suits are really one of the ones who make that judgment. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm sure Europe wouldn't have, like, that much of an opinion about Brian using their song.
Mm-hmm.
But whatever record label
owns that, they care.
They will,
I'm sure. Yeah. What's his name from Europe? Joey Tempest?
Yeah.
He would just be like, what's an AEW? Yeah.
What's a Bryan Danielson?
And we find out he's like the biggest wrestling fan in the world. You know, yeah, MTV cribs, Joey Tempest. You go through his house.
Got all these wrestling ROH posters.
Yeah. Like obscure AWA posters on his wall.
It's like vintage championships.
Imagine. He'd be like the last person you would think.
Hey.
You know, hey, weirder things.
I've said it before and I'll say it again, and as controversial as this might be, pro wrestling is like cocaine. More people are into it than you think.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. But, you know, with that wraps up
the
second annual AEW Forbidden Door. And being that how successful it was this year, I can only imagine we'll have a third one next year. Mm-hmm. Whether it'll be
definitely
somewhere in America or maybe in Japan next year. Who knows?
It could be.
But
yeah,
we'll see. We will see.
So with that, as our longtime listeners know, we have the WNIC title.
Yeah.
Now.
This one was for the, starting with Double or Nothing, we introduced the All-Canadian Championship.
Right.
Which is the one we defend for AEW pay-per-views.
Right.
And we still have the WNIC Championship, which is defended for WWE pay-per-views. And Dustin has both.
Yes.
and
he successfully defended because
he tied with
him. Tied, yes. And of course, in the case of a time limit draw in pro wrestling,
yep,
the tradition always is the champ retains. Yeah.
Well,
so
Dustin remains a double champion. And surprise, surprise, he's not here.
Yeah.
What an ego.
He's kind of ducking. I think, yeah.
Mr. Self-Importance.
That's right. So, but for our purposes right now, AEW Forbidden Door, horns up, horns down, horns in the middle.
I'm going to give it a horns way
up. Way up, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, it's just a good time.
Yep, seeing AEW and NJPW go head-to-head is just, it's better than Survivor Series watching Raw and SmackDown go head-to-head, you know. But who am I? I enjoy watching really good matches. Sorry.
And I think it delivered.
It did, for sure. It was a good time. Really good time. I enjoyed it.
Now, what's not always a good time, though, is the Dark Side of the Ring episodes.
Oh, those are always like...
Those are always kind of tough.
Yeah.
Season 4, off and running.
Addicting to watch, but at the same time, you don't feel good after watching.
You don't.
No.
You don't. You don't. I wanted to go over, the majority. Like, we're 5 episodes in.
Okay.
I've got 4 done. By the time episode 4, the Graham family in Florida... By the time I sat down, you know, get myself ready for that, I waited too long. The next episode was up, which was Matt Bourne.
Right.
And I'm kind of like, okay, you know what? I'm a little more interested in the Matt Bourne story here, so I'll get to the Graham, you know, at another time. And then before I got to that, boom, Junkyard Dog was episode 5 and all that. So I'm short. I'm down 1 episode.
Okay.
Okay. I don't know how many Ducky has seen. And you said you only caught the Matt Bourne episode.
I only caught the Matt Bourne episode so far. I will go back and watch.
Right.
I'll catch up eventually.
Okay, fair enough. So instead of this being a Dark Side of the Ring segment, maybe we'll just kind of focus on
Doink
Matt,
the Clown.
On Doink the Clown, on Matt Bourne and all that, because it's, oh my God, this.
Yeah. I never realized that Matt Bourne had such a dark past and just life in general. Like
I knew he wasn't the best person to be around in the locker, and I knew there was drugs involved.
Oh yeah, as there was back then.
As everyone, it was the 80s, man.
But Matt Bourne, it seemed like he had never been sober a day in his life based on the way that they were telling stories. Like in this he was always either like drinking or I think one of his ex-wives said, like, every day he would wake up and start by smoking weed, and then he would just go from there.
Wow.
I've got nothing against smoking weed. I do that myself.
Right.
But at the same time, like, for that to just be something you start your day off with, and, like, I end my day smoking weed before I go to bed.
Yeah.
Once I've done everything that I need to do.
Mm-hmm. Or if you're going to do it, like, when you're surrounded by friends and having a good time. That's time to do it for sure.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah, but no, that's not a good sign.
No, and just the horror stories that his ex-wives and some of the stuff like Mick Foley was saying and Dr. Tom was saying, or was it Dr. Tom?
I think so.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, okay. Yeah, just like, it's so uncomfortable to sit there watching this, but at the same time, it's so addicting at the same time for lack of a better term.
Right.
And I didn't know that he had such a tortured history growing up as a second generation star with that pressure weighing on him. And then, like, being so addicted to drugs and, like, yeah, like, and, like, the story of how he met, like, his first wife being that after, was it after he got fired from WWF? Or
he had a couple wives, and they spoke to two of them. Mm-hmm. They spoke to both of them, so I don't know which time you're talking about.
Yeah, there was that one wife that, he's just like, hey, I'm Doink the Clown, and she's like, from WWE.
That's
she's
the
like,
second oh, that, one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's like, well, that's nice.
Yeah.
What the fuck is a doink?
Yeah, yeah. And, yeah, like, I always knew there was multiple guys who played Doink the Clown.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't realize that after WrestleMania 9, when the second Doink came out, that that was when, like, they just swept it under the rug and fired Matt Bourne.
Yeah, I didn't know that either.
Yeah, that's kind of harsh. You but know. At the same time, it's like, with the guy being the lifestyle that he had, I totally understand why WWE saw him as a liability and didn't want his death on their hands, potentially. So,
but just bringing him back, because like they knew he was crazy. My first exposure to Matt Bourne was WrestleMania 1.
Yep.
Okay. And then in the after mags, just once he left and he did...
And that was
the territories and all that. And then he comes back as Doink.
Yeah.
Okay, fine.
It was match at WrestleMania 1. That was against Steamboat, was it?
It was, yes.
Yes, okay.
Yeah. And, like, he had all the potential in the world there.
Oh, just, he was an amazing performer. Uh-huh, but, the lifestyle.
And he had the reputation in the locker of being, like, a bully and a... He would fight anyone at any given time. And
the stories of the fights he would get into at bars.
Right. Just,
yeah.
You know, it was absolutely crazy. So when you think about it, though, when they decided, well, we're going to have a psychotic clown gimmick.
Yeah.
Hey, wait a minute. I got the perfect guy in mind.
And I know a guy who happens to be a real life psycho.
Oh, he would be perfect for this. And that's the problem.
Yeah.
He was. There wasn't much acting.
Nope.
In there. But he killed it. The Doink character, as much as I didn't like it, because you're literally turning my great sport into a circus show?
Yeah.
Like, you're literally doing it? So I think Vince did that just to piss me off.
Yeah, of course.
Like, he thinks we're a circus, does he? Well, I'll wait till he gets a load of this. But he pulled it off because people have that clownophobia.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
what I call it.
Yeah.
I never understood clownophobia myself because I figured, like, it's a clown. Pretty sure about 80% of clowns I could kick the shit out of. So,
like, except for the ones from Killer Clowns from Outer Space.
It's Outer Space, except the supernatural ones.
What about
Pennywise?
Captain Spaulding.
Yeah. Well, Spaulding and Art.
Yeah.
They get the drop on you.
Okay, yeah.
So if those guys don't get the drop on me, I'm taking those fuckers down. Clowns just don't scare me.
Yeah, well, even when, like, guys like Captain Spaulding and Doink, when they look at the camera and they just have that smile that turns into just that grimace.
Uh-huh.
And I'm just like, oh, that's a little chilling.
That's how it works.
Yeah.
That's how it works. And it played on the clownophobia.
Yeah.
That
kids were
had.
Afraid of Doink.
Mm-hmm. And because he would be laughing and having a great time and then done.
Yeah.
And he would just get the psycho look and then break out into the laughter again. Yeah. It's like, okay, I'm
throwing
fucking
streamers
hate this.
And getting the silly string and the seltzer. And yeah.
That's right. It's like, okay, I hate this gimmick, but God, does it work so well?
Yeah. He definitely played to its strengths. That's for sure. Like, he knew what he was doing.
Right.
But it's like, after he got fired again from WWE, but then he kept on doing the Doink the Clown thing on the indie circuit.
Right.
And then he did that whole thing with Hacksaw Jim Duggan at that indie event in a gym in front of 100 people.
Right.
He just decided to shoot on him in the ring in the middle of the match, and Duggan was just like, are we shooting now?
Yeah, you want to go, brother?
Yeah.
Like, we'll go. We'll go. And that's just... I could, you know what? I don't care if you're in front of 100,000 people or you're 100. You go. You give it 110, you know, percent of what you do. And, like, he was dogging it, mm-hmm. you know, and he lost all professionalism. And, yeah. you know, it's too bad Duggan didn't take a round out of him.
Yeah, but then there was the whole, like, situation surrounding his death. Like, it sounds very, very fishy. Like, his one ex-wife and his daughter are fully convinced that his last wife let him die. Or yeah. either that or poisoned him.
Yeah.
Like, that all seems very suspect. Like, I can't really say for sure. I can only speculate because I have nothing to do with these people.
That's another thing. Yeah, yeah,
I only know what I'm told on the TV. So
wrestling fans are all experts on other people's lives.
Oh yeah, they know who's a piece of shit just because someone else said it.
Yeah. And you know, it's scary. It's a terrible way to go.
And what the autopsy showed that his heart was like 6 times larger than it should have been.
That's brutal.
Yeah. That just tells you how much he indulged in like alcohol mm-hmm. and drugs. Cause like that's no human heart should ever like despite what the Grinch who stole Christmas tells you.
Yes.
It your heart growing large. 3 sizes is not a good thing.
Not a good thing. No. The whole thing that really disturbs me though is, and there was a lot. As a father, he was an absentee dad, uh-huh. and he basically, like, he walked out on his kids.
Yep.
You know, not only is he a wife beater, he was a deadbeat as well. And I just, wow. But I don't want to, I just wanted to throw that out there as a responsible father myself. I wouldn't have been able to sleep if I didn't throw that out there, but that's all. I'm going to just begin and end with that because I don't want to just turn it into a bashing thing because we're already doing a good enough job as it is.
I can't imagine like doing that and like living with that on your conscience.
Mm-hmm.
It's like,
mm-hmm.
but then again, I guess that's why a lot of people turn to drugs and alcohol. So they don't think about it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
It's just, I don't know. It's a tough topic.
And it's a story that it's definitely one of the dark sides,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's a story that had to be told. It's a cautionary tale as well.
Yeah.
Younger generation, like you have the old timers like Cornette, you know, he accuses the young guys first in Ring of Honor and then. And now in AEW, you know, when they get to the ring, you see them, you know, laying with their head on their gear, playing video games on the phone and all that. And meanwhile, Cornette's telling stories. I remember, you know, back in the territory days, the guys would be shoot fighting, talking about where they were going to go out afterwards, you know, talking about pussy and all this. That was the lifestyle.
Yeah.
And look what it did.
Yep.
So if the younger guys, if the younger generation, if the worst thing they're doing is playing video games on their phone,
yeah,
like
I know the Undertaker doesn't approve.
Yeah, leave them alone.
Yeah,
you know, you know,
like if they're not going out and party, like I know, like back in the day, like in the 80s, like Rush or in the 70s, Rush would get flack from like fellow touring bands for just hanging out in their hotel rooms all night.
Yeah,
it's like. What, these guys didn't want, these guys weren't, they were fucking nerds. They weren't about going out like they were, and they were all married. So, kudos to them for wanting to just stay secluded in their hotel room and watching shitty cable TV. That's just what they.
Let them be. Like, yeah. I'm all for, and you know, because we do it, I'm all for once in a while, once a week, go out, have some drinks with your buddies and all that.
Every night though,
yeah. I couldn't do it.
No.
Oh my god!
That would wear down on you. It would,
and it wouldn't be fun anymore. And I never want to get to a point where I'm not having fun having a couple drinks.
Yeah, when you get
burnt
out,
I'm keeping it fun. Yeah. And when it's no longer fun, stop. Yeah.
Burnout is very real, and it affects us all at some point.
Oh, no, for sure, for sure. So, yeah, unfortunately.
Everything in moderation.
It's just, just. But I will say the JYD episode.
Yeah.
Okay, that's kind of the same thing. He had the world in his hand, you know, and it was basically drugs.
Always
you know,
is.
that just kind of, you know.
Yeah.
That kind of finished that story. Fortunately, though, it wasn't all. I'm just going to touch upon it because hopefully we'll get into these a little bit deeper. But the Magnum TA, okay, episode, that was the one I was looking forward to the most, obviously, just
right.
for my own personal interests yep. and all that. That's not even a dark side.
No.
No, he had a car accident. Oh, he wasn't drinking. He wasn't.
It was just he was a victim of circumstance.
Yeah, it was just one of those things. This and the story that, about him living and actually going on to having a life outside of wrestling and being successful in that field, whatever it was.
Yeah,
that's inspirational.
Yeah,
that's not dark at all.
No, like it's unfortunate what happened to him, and I imagine like having to live that way must like weigh heavily on him mm-hmm. every single day, but. Being able to carry on, like I know it takes a very strong will to carry on being that limited in mobility.
Yeah.
So, it's also like you said, it's inspirational.
And
it shows
yeah.
that like life is worth living.
For sure. So. For sure. For sure. So make that your next episode.
Yeah.
And I'm going to throw this out to everyone. Get like I still have one more I'm going to check out maybe tonight. You know, maybe this weekend,
yeah.
But so far, so good. It's been, but I can't really say there's ever been a dud season of the show.
No, it's definitely, yeah, it's the way it's presented is very, very, it's a very well done show, even mm-hmm. though if it is not about the most uplifting topics, but,
but that's kind of the idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
I think one of my favorites so far was definitely the plane ride from hell episode. That's I didn't realize how out of hand that
it
actually
really
got.
Yeah,
like I didn't realize that they came close, like that Kurt Hennig and Brock Lesnar came close to like opening the door midair over the Atlantic Ocean.
Like, yeah, they could have wiped out half the roster,
the entire Raw roster.
Yeah,
or yeah.
That could have that could have been a real Leonard Skinner situation.
Yeah.
And wow,
yeah. Like how many people were on that? Like, that
would have been Flair's second car airplane crash.
Yeah, but like just imagine being on that flight and seeing Brock Lesnar throw Kurt Hennig into that door and seeing that light change color. My face would turn white that second that happened. Like, I'm happy that everybody made it out okay. Uh-huh. Like, but my God, And JR was fired for all of this?
yeah. For what?
Yeah.
Yeah.
For not being able to control guys like Kurt Hennig and Brock Lesnar. Sorry.
Yeah. What's he gonna do?
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, get on the rest of the season. I'm gonna finish it off as well. Yeah. And it's
watch it any way you can.
Yeah.
Whether it's on Prime, YouTube, whatever streaming service it's on.
I think they're all up on YouTube. I have it on Crave.
Okay.
You know,
I have Crave too. Which reminds me, I need to go on Crave. I need to watch Evil Dead Rises.
Evil Dead Rise is up. I will be watching that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not to change topics from wrestling to horror, but I love my horror.
Yeah, you and I can do that quite easy.
Evil Dead is one of my favorite franchises.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah, a week you and I can easily go wrestling, horror, metal.
Yeah.
Back to horror, to wrestling.
Yeah.
So.
And then sometimes you got guys like Bray Wyatt who have a horror themed gimmick and metal and a metal theme song.
Theme song, yes. So. It's pretty much the whole
speaking
whole
of clowns, Bray Wyatt, the fiend, you know.
And I think maybe it's time to switch gears here a bit for tonight's Turnbuckle Talk.
Okay. Sorry, we don't have more to talk about. We're going into much more detail than we usually would on these things.
It all kind of evens out
with only two of us here. We're kind of going through it a little bit quicker than we usually would. So, but we're trying to stretch it out and make this as entertaining as possible for everyone at home.
As possible. So. Yeah. With tonight's Turnbuckle Talk, with everyone, every fan is different.
Yeah.
Every fan kind of came in at this time, at this era.
We'll just look at you and I. we're from two different eras.
For sure. Mm. And with that, every fan also has, you know, the height of their fandom.
Yeah.
Okay. It's like, well, I started watching here.
Yeah.
But holy shit, about 5 years after here, it really started to kick in for me, and I absolutely loved it then. And then a couple years after that, it was kind of blah. But then it picked back up and all that. So it's peaks and valleys, you know, and it's not just in wrestling, you know, like, okay, well, just what we were saying. The heavy metal world, you know, sometimes there's some points where not everything is blowing smoke up your skirt. There's sometimes in the horror films, it's like, okay, that movie's good, but these four, I could do without them and all that. It's just not the best period.
No.
You know? So wrestling is like the same.
Yep. Sometimes you release Master of Puppets. Sometimes you release Saint Anger.
That's right. That's right. So I'm curious. Like, I got, and our listeners as well, we kind of know when you first got into professional wrestling, but what was the height of your fandom? Like, when you, when, like, this is when you were the most interested.
Well, I was probably the most interested in the WWF when I got into it when I was in seventh grade. And this was, like right in the thick of the Attitude Era.
No, okay.
Yeah. Stone Cold Steve Austin was champion or chasing after the title. And, right. like, right when I first started to get into, like, when I really got into it was, like, after WrestleMania 14, leading into WrestleMania, like, that, and that year leading into WrestleMania 15. Austin was champion, got stripped of the title, he had to chase back after it, didn't win the Royal Rumble, but somehow he still got into the main event of WrestleMania, got the title back from The Rock, everyone was happy. So, and, like, not, and, but I, yeah, I honestly, I gotta say, like, the height of it all, probably WrestleMania 17. Because that was one of the greatest WrestleManias ever. That was the one where Austin turned heel. That was the one with the TLC match. Like, so much was happening. WCW had just gone out of business, and the WCW wrestlers were starting to come in to the WWF.
The invasion.
The invasion without Goldberg, the NWO, Eric Bischoff,
anybody,
Ric Flair. Yeah, you know, just all the mid-card guys. Yeah, you got your Sean. Booker T was there, but yeah, and like I'm happy that Diamond Dallas Page was there, but they didn't utilize him.
Oh God, that was disgraceful.
It was so disgraceful. Like going from what he was like the guy. He was like the Rock. He was like the Rock of WCW. Essentially. Yeah, he was their people's champion.
Right.
Like,
and then to go to like stalking a guy's
the
wife.
Undertaker's
really?
Wife. Yeah.
Wow.
Like, that's what you got for him. Like. The guy could have sat at home and collected his AOL Time Warner check. But no, he decided he wanted to be a part of this because he thought it was going to make history, and that's what he's given.
Yeah.
But.
Wow. He was kicking himself.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he made bank. So, and either way, he made money. But yeah, like when WCW folded and all those guys were starting to come into the WWF, I got really excited. At the time, I wasn't aware of the whole difference between the WCW, like that there were WCW contracts and AOL Time Warner contracts. So I didn't know that guys like Kevin Nash, Hulk Hogan, Goldberg, Sting, all those guys, I had no idea that they had different contracts and were just being paid to sit at home. I was just like, because when the guys started to come in, I was like, there's Booker T, there's Buff Bagwell, there's this guy, there's that guy. Then all the mid-card guys like, any day now.
I'm already looking up at the Raptors because Sting's coming down.
Sting's going to come down any minute. I'm going to hear Goldberg's theme happen, and then him and Stone Cold Steve Austin are going to face off against each other. Nope. didn't turn out that way at all.
It was wrestling's biggest popcorn fart. Was the invasion.
Even WWE themselves admits that nowadays, and like at least they're not being like, oh no, it was great. But
what are you talking about?
Yeah, but
oh
yeah, and
Hogan was totally the face at Shea Stadium. What are you talking about?
Yeah And I, with WCW, I think the height around that time when I was watching, that was when Goldberg was in the middle of his streak that somehow jumped up by like double digits every week. Don't ask me how that works when there's only 7 days in a week and two shows a week, but you know, wrestling logic. But yeah, when Goldberg beat Hulk Hogan for the World Heavyweight Championship in the Georgia Dome in Atlanta, Georgia, where Goldberg is from, that was an absolute pop. In the, we've all made it pretty clear that not like all three of us are not the biggest Goldberg fans.
Not at all.
But at the time, that was a big deal.
It was fun to watch.
Yeah, because he was like one of WCW's only homegrown talents that they had. Like up until that point, most of their big guys in WCW had already made their names in WWF.
Right.
And they just came over because they wanted fewer dates and they wanted more money and they wanted more creative control. And that's what ended up being the downfall of the company altogether. They didn't have very many original guys that they could call their own. So, like, seeing Goldberg rise up to those ranks and beat a guy like Hulk Hogan.
Oh, yeah.
So
that was huge.
On an episode of Nitro, nevertheless. Yeah. Like, I remember watching that. I remember staying up until 3 in the morning because that's the only way we could watch Nitro up here because we didn't have TNT and no Canadian channel played it live because TBS, we got TBS, but they wouldn't play Nitro until, like I said, midnight or 1 in the morning on a Wednesday.
So, TSN was airing it, on...
well, that was, they aired WWF, TSN did.
Yeah, and...
TBS was airing WCW, and The Score was airing SmackDown. It was like TSN was on Raw, The Score... Yeah, SmackDown was on The Score, and then ECW was on TNN.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
For a little bit.
for a while there.
Yeah, because like when I got into ECW, that was kind of when the company was already starting to go downhill, and like their major players were abandoning ship. So.
Right. So that was kind of the height.
The height
of your ECW was on its way down.
Yeah, like when I first discovered it was when it probably in the year 2000, so its final year.
No, okay. Yeah.
So like that's I learned about guys like Rob Van Dam and Tommy Dreamer and Justin Credible, still one of the greatest wrestling names of all time in my opinion. Rhino, I learned that's where the Dudley Boys came from, and like when I started seeing all these guys show up in the WWF one by one, I was just like, so I guess ECW's done. Like I just turned on TNN one day when it would usually be on, and it's just like, oh, it's not there.
It's not there. Shit. Yeah. It was definitely a sad day in our household because like the height of our interest, which I mean, like Mrs. Snowy, she's not the biggest wrestling fan, but when we first started dating, we were like the last two people still watching the AWA. You know, and then she went, you know, a wrestling hiatus until I introduced her to ECW.
Right.
Like, I was already familiar with it, following it in the aftermags. But when they announced, okay, the TNN gig, Friday nights, and, well, that's a terrible, you know, Friday night. But I'm going to make an exception for this.
Yeah.
Because I'm already captivated by it. I'm already hook, line, and sinker into it. I just haven't really seen it yet, if that makes any sense.
Yep.
You know? So when we saw it, and it was those matches, the Rob Van Dam, Jerry Lynn matches.
Yes.
Had us both. Wow. Because oh my God, this was the first return of Flair Steamboat. Only a hell of a lot more aerial.
Yeah. And with a lot more chairs.
And a lot more chairs and a lot more this and a lot more that.
A lot more ladders.
Yeah.
And a lot more tables.
It was absolutely incredible. And that was my height of my fandom in ECW once I finally got to see it. Because before you know it, we're ordering the pay-per-views every week or every month or every other or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And yeah, we were both all in.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, though, this is when being a responsible parent comes in.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the attitude era was going on as well. And little Snowy was just a kid.
Yeah.
You know, you're not... How old are you again? Sorry.
I'm 37.
Okay, well, okay. You got about 5-6 years on my daughter. So yeah. She would have been just little, younger, in her single digits.
Yep.
So Saturday night or Friday night, ECW is on. Your mom and I are watching ECW. Go do something.
Yeah.
And she really wasn't a fan. She didn't care.
Right. I'm surprised my parents let me watch WWF when I was 12 years old during that time. It was, well, being how women were depicted at that time on screen.
Too, yeah.
And just the sheer violence and just the,
right.
Like I told you this the other night when you were over for Forbidden Door. When I signed up for the WWE Network, I was convinced that I was just going to go back and rewatch all this Attitude Era stuff. And I got, like, a lot of the content from the Attitude Era did not age very well.
Not at all.
At all.
No.
Like, I still like D-Generation X, but when I see Triple H walking out in blackface, that's not really best thing. Or the Jerry Lawler's commentary during a bra and panties match.
Yeah, just the idea of a bra and panties match is good for an adult male.
Yeah.
But my 7-year-old daughter, or 8-year-old, or however old she was, you know, like, yeah, no, it's okay. So, yeah, we didn't want her watching Raw and all that.
Yeah.
Not that she was up or anything when WCW was on, but WCW would have been good for her.
Mm-hmm.
And we brought her to the locals.
Okay.
The local indies and all that. And, you know, I don't think she really cared too much. It was an evening out with a family evening.
Right.
You know, and all that. So yeah, ECW, when we first started getting it up here, that was totally the height.
Right.
My height for WCW, though, see, that's kind of tough. The same thing could be said with that when we first started getting, once again, after Mags, following all the way. And then we started getting TBS 1990.
Yeah.
I guess, and now all of a sudden, Saturday night, 6:05.
Yep.
You know, what was it called again?
It was called WCW Saturday Night.
Yeah. Well, I made sure, even though it's Saturday night, not the best time, but this is at the time, this is really the only non-WWF stuff that we were getting here.
Right.
So we had to make sure to, you know, so I'm pumped. I'm excited.
Yep.
You know, this is absolutely fantastic. Ordering the pay-per-views and Van Vader, Lex Luger, Barry Windham, Sting. Like, this is, you know.
And the TV championship would get defended on every episode.
Yeah. Titles meant something.
Yeah.
As well. So that and the Monday Night War.
Yeah. I don't like the way that belt was treated. Like, it was such an important belt, like, throughout the 90s, being that it was, like, the one you could tune in to see every week being defended.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the International Championship on AEW now, or even what the TNT title kind of was supposed to be, but kind of didn't really turn into that. I don't know. It's like what the Intercontinental title used to be in WWF, and, like, but then, like, was Scott Hall and Kevin Nash threw it in the garbage because they were sick of it. Because Scott Hall also already had the United States Championship, so he's just like, what do I need this for?
Yeah. Oh, that doesn't help it.
And then Duggan dug it out of the trash.
Dug it out.
Claimed himself to be TV champion, only for him to be stripped of it when Russo and Bischoff came back for the Great Reset. And then they just got rid of the championship altogether.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's brutal. And in the 80s, the Crockett days, the NWA TV title meant something. Dusty Rhodes, Tully Blanchard, they traded it back and forth. Nikita Koloff.
Yeah, I remember when they had the tournament for it on when Power was a thing before, like when the NWA like kind of was making a comeback when Power was a YouTube series.
Oh.
I remember them reintroducing the TV title, even though it was on the internet, but I digress. I remember Ricky Starks being in that tournament, but yeah. Like,
no,
I know how important a television title is. It's like, it's that one belt that you can guarantee to see defended every week
on TV.
Yeah,
that was totally the idea about it, because when the idea of the TV titles first the concept of it was you went to see, you know, it was the wrestling blueprint was house shows.
Right.
You saw the jobber matches on TV and that got you into to the house shows. Mm-hmm. Well, we need someone watching TV, the TV shows. Well, let's introduce this title, the TV title. So not only now are you getting, using it as a platform to get people into the house shows. Well, we've got people tuning in to see the TV show as well. And that was the whole concept and it worked. And yeah, it's just too bad that just the way the TV title just over the years, it's just, with the WWF as well. My height, the Bret Hart era.
Yeah.
Like first, and because, okay, like you had Bret Hart, and once they started pushing him, you know, and he became champion, or even before that as Intercontinental Champion.
Yeah.
And they brought Kurt Hennig in because I'd already been watching him for years.
Oh, their matches for the Intercontinental title were
incredible.
So good.
Yeah. Incredible. Those had me absolutely captivated, just like Flair and Steamboat, just like Rob Van Dam, Jerry Lynn, and all that. Like, that's was absolutely incredible. Uh-huh. And, like, that was, like, there was a lot of circusy stuff and all that, but Bret Hart had me hook, line, and sinker. That was the best. And Kurt Hennig.
Yeah.
Like, those were the reasons, like, to tune into the WWF. Even more so, okay, and I'm trying to remember. Was the Hart Foundation versus the USA? That wasn't part of, that was right before the Attitude Era, right? Or just sort of on the cusp?
Like, the Attitude Era kind of started, like, a little bit after the Montreal Screwjob.
Right.
I think. I mean, maybe a year after, or like 6 months after.
Right, yeah. Right. Well, leading up to that, where Bret Hart, okay, and this is what I was saying when we were talking about Punk in Chicago. We'll get to this a little later.
Yep.
Bret Hart in Canada, particularly Calgary.
Yep.
Versus, like, they were the total baby faces.
Oh, of course. And it was like then, Bizarro World when the WWF would come up here. And the
it Hart, was. It, like, it totally was.
Stone Cold Steve Austin would come out and get booed. And the Hart Foundation would come out and be welcomed like heroes.
It was. Yeah. It was. It was perfect. And as for me, because I saw Bret Hart, I saw Owen, I saw Brian Pillman all in Stampede Wrestling.
Yeah.
Now, I missed the Bulldogs and I missed Jim Neidhart in Stampede, but they did come back. And, like, all these wrestlers I've watched in Stampede and all that. Now, here they are giving it to the WWF. I'll never forget that one promo that Bret Hart cut leading up to their, like, he was in the middle of the war with the Patriot.
Yeah.
And he was talking about how in Canada, we care for our sick and our poor and we, you know, in Canada, you know, we're this. And then you go down to the U.S. and it's just like, oh, my God, he's going to get shot. If this was the territory days,
yeah,
you know, and they the next time they're down south, you know, some redneck is going to pull a gun on him because, yeah, as you find out in Dark Side of the Ring episodes, some of those fans during the territory days were batshit crazy.
Yep.
And that's what, it's kind of bad to say, but that's when wrestling was at, pro wrestling itself was at its height of its popularity were during those territory days because you had that passion from the fans. Mm-hmm. And Bret Hart just played on that so well. It was absolutely incredible. So, like, yeah, Bret Hart, Kurt Angle, when they were on fire in the WWF, that's when that federation had me at the height.
Yeah.
I'm not going to AWA Crockett, no. World class. Don't, like, worry. Don't. I'm not going to put you on the spot.
No. And like, I'm excited to be witnessing AEW just like continue to grow over the last 4 years ever, and being able to watch it from episode one.
Yeah.
I think I've only missed one pay-per-view in the last 4 years. Yeah. So like they've had their ups and downs so far, but like they really, I guess their height at this point has probably been the, All Out 2021. Like, not only was that just a fantastic pay-per-view overall, but the ending when Adam Cole and Bryan Danielson made their debuts in the company.
Yeah.
Ship from the WWF. Right.
Yeah.
That was probably my favorite moment that they've had so far, because I just remember everybody being here for that. And
that's
when
right.
Adam, we fully expected Bryan Danielson to come out, but when the lights went out and Adam Cole's name went across the screen, all of us were just like, holy shit.
Yeah, we were 12 again, you know?
Yeah.
We were 12 and some wrestler jumped from one territory to the other.
Yeah.
You know? Like, that's, whoa.
It was fun. No, I had I don't remember the last time I had that much fun watching a wrestling event.
Me too. Yeah. I'm kind of like, AEW has only been around for 4 years.
Yeah.
So
it's
from the get-go to now, I'm still in the height. But
yeah.
What you said, here's the height. That night was just a little bit more.
That had a little bit more of a bump to it.
A little bit
than,
of oomph.
Yeah.
Yeah, but
like they've had some low points, like that fucking barbed wire death match dud at the end.
But
yeah.
Even great federations like AWA and World Class during the days, they had duds as well. Like
so did WCW. So,
everyone did.
Some more than others, you know. But
yeah. Yeah. TNA/Impact is a little tougher than for me because
I didn't watch that when it first started, even though like I was obviously watching wrestling at the time because the WCW ended, and then pretty much as WCW ended, TNA began, like within the span of a year.
The new WCW. Yeah,
I wasn't able to watch it because there's no way in hell my dad was gonna pay $10 a week for a fucking wrestling show. I was 16 years old. I didn't have control over the the cable bill. So
unfortunately, the cable bill was mine.
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, I shelled out for the $10 every week, which wasn't too bad because it was just like, well, if you bought a WWF pay per view for $40, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, but I wouldn't say, and see the problem with me and TNA/Impact is I don't have the memories like that. When I hear you and Dustin talk about, oh, this happened at WrestleMania 20 and this one happened at Starrcade, insert year here.
Yeah.
I don't retain that stuff when it comes to TNA. I remember big angles and I remember when I was most excited for it, but to say, oh yeah, during No Surrender, you know, 2009, that would be my apex of my interest. I just can't do that.
Right.
So, but for me, you know, I have to think of things a little bit differently, but it's like AJ Styles and Samoa Joe.
Yeah.
Their times in TNA, like they really had me going because
Christopher Daniels
as well, because I didn't see a lot of ROH. You know, I bought the DVDs when I had the chance.
Yeah, same here. But I didn't learn about ROH until like at least a decade into their existence.
It's not like we were getting a lot of ROH DVDs up here. So I caught it whenever I could. But once again, after magazines, you know, I'm following ROH, you know, and now these guys show up to TNA, but it wasn't like when a wrestler would leave Crockett, would leave the AWA and go to McMahonland and, well, the roses off the bloom. Because they got him doing something stupid, except for Kurt Hennig. That's it. You know, and Rick Rude and all that. Sometimes the WWF got it right. Sometimes they gave him the Widowmaker, gimmick or something stupid, or switched you from the sheep herders to the bushwhackers.
Yeah.
Did something dumb. TNA never did that.
No.
When they brought AJ Styles in, when they brought Samoa Joe in, they brought in the ROH.
The versions.
Versions.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. Yeah.
And then they started bringing in people who got fired from the WWF, and then, yeah.
And it's kind of like.
And then it kind of turned into WCW 2.0.
Yeah.
But, like, the only big thing that I remember happening in TNA was probably one of the worst things that ever happened to them, was when Victory Road 2011, when Jeff Hardy came out, just absolutely bombed on his face.
Yeah, Sting was pissed.
Oh, yeah. So, like, even the, like, because they had to call the audible, like, obviously, because Jeff was in no condition to compete.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, they had to call the audible and end the match quick. And then the fans were chanting bullshit. And Sting just, like, turns around and goes, I agree. He's just on live camera.
Absolute bullshit. Yeah.
He was very unimpressed. But it was, like, for that to stick out. And, of course, I mean, let's not forget Sacrifice 2008, the build-up for that. Because something about adding Kurt Angle to the mix and your chances of winning drastically go down because you got a 33 1/3% chance. Minus my 25% chance, you got an 8 1/3% chance of winning. And then my 75% chance of winning. And then at 66 2/3% chance. And then you got 141 2/3% chance of winning at Sacrifice. You know, something along those lines.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Best worst promo of all time, I say. Now that it's being turned into so many memes, like,
oh yeah,
you saw that meme, like that Simpsons wrestling page that I follow, where it's like the Shining parody where Marge is walking up to the typewriter, and on the typewriter it just has the entire Steiner Math promo written on it.
Wow. That's genius.
It is. I enjoyed that very much. Yeah. They even like incorporated that into the, they made a meme out of the, when Bart was like sitting there in the whole, from now on, the baby sleeps in the crib. Iron helps us play. And then like, no, it was Scott Steiner's head floating, and it just says, you know, they say all men are created equal. As soon as I see those, like, that first sentence, I'm just like, fuck. Like, I know exactly what the rest of it says, but I'm still, like, got to zoom in on it and read it. Just it's just so fucking good. Yeah, so, yeah, I don't know. Maybe that's my height of TNA, was Scott Steiner's math promo.
Fair enough. Okay, kind of for, with me, with TNA, and I've kind of been out of Impact for a little while, but that's a whole other thing. I'm definitely hoping to get back into it soon enough. But
yeah.
The blueprint for the WWE's Women's Revolution was Gail Kim in TNA.
Yeah.
First of all, like her amazing matches with Awesome Kong.
Mm-hmm.
And then Kim and Taryn Terrell every week just tore it up.
Yeah.
Absolutely incredible. Like they had me hook, line, and sinker through all of this. And now when I see Trish Stratus, as much as, okay, she's cool.
Yep.
Canadian. I love what she has done in the past and today and all that. Like when she says, well, it's what I did. And okay, yeah, you're cutting a promo and all that, but something is telling me you're kind of believing it.
Oh, like, well, she's playing up the heel role. She hasn't played a heel in over 20 years.
In a while, so, yeah. Yeah, but something tells me that there's, you know, what have I said before? When a wrestler tells the truth, it's 30% bullshit.
Yeah.
When a wrestler lies, it's 10% truth or 30% truth and all that.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of thinking she sort of believes it. And no, I'm sorry. Because those were incredible. Those were absolutely incredible matches.
Well, WWE themselves would love you to believe that they invented women's wrestling. So,
yeah.
And that Stephanie McMahon invented women altogether.
That's right. No. But not Fabulous Moolah, the brain fart.
Mae Young?
Mae Young.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, she was when she came back to wrestling for the Attitude, well, she was a rookie.
Yeah. Oh, you for know. Sure. You know,
she had never wrestled before.
Not once.
No. Not at all. Yeah. So that was definitely kind of my height.
Yeah.
And that's, like I said, I don't want to put you on the spot into the territories. Do you have anything else you kind of want to?
Not really. Those are the only federations I've ever really watched were the ones we've already mentioned. So, okay. Like I said, I wasn't really that big into. I never really watched Ring of Honor on a weekly basis or really got into it all that much. So,
okay.
Yeah, and on the I wasn't really around during the territory days, so yeah, I can't really comment on that. Right. So.
Fair enough. Then we'll kind of bring this crazy train into the station. What I got to do is bring a bunch of ROH DVDs.
Yes.
One night, and we'll just.
Yeah,
we'll just binge.
I would love to do that, like back in their high school gymnasium days.
Yes. Yeah, so because that, like, it's like there's no way they would be able to do this on TV because you only have X amount of time, and like these are house shows, and they're tearing it up this well on a house show in front of X amount of people. This is crazy. Well,
I'd love to see some classic matches. Like Briscoe's matches before
before
Jay and Mark were them boys.
For sure. Then, like I said, maybe it's just about that time.
Yep.
How can people get a hold of us?
Well, they can get a hold of us on Facebook at facebook.com/WrestlingNightInCanada or on Instagram at WrestlingNightInCanada.
And, of course, Wrestling Night in Canada are proud members of the Shining Wizards Network, shiningwizardsnetwork.com. Check us out there as well. Like, the whole network is just a myriad of great wrestling podcasts and plus pop culture. And if you haven't had enough of your cool Uncle Snowy, you might want to check out Radioactive Metal, our sister show, where I sit down every week with my good buddy Aaron, and we go through everything.
I'm on a few episodes there too.
There you are. Yeah,
and I'll be on future ones very soon too. I'm sure.
For sure. So yeah, in the meantime and in between time. That's it. This has been another exciting episode of Wrestling Night in Canada. I'm Snowy White.
I'm Matt Copper.
Signing off.
And we're from Winnipeg, you idiots.